You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome in again. A busy week as we bring you into MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition. I'm Dave Ramirez. This week, boy, we found out about the Reds still in the glow of a great All-Star Game week. Pirates sputtering but not panicking. Milwaukee Brewers have turned things around with Craig Counsell, and Taylor Youngman has been pitching well. Cubs youth, some need a rest, some are getting called up, and the Cardinals, even though they don't need a whole lot, man, they've got a lot of options here at the trade deadline. That and a whole lot more coming up, National League Central Edition, MLB.com Extras. Look, Jen, a lot going on with this team. Here we go, best record in the National League. They got the little scare from the Pirates right before the All-Star break. But news that before Tuesday's game, Stephen Piscotty's getting the call up, and it's not just to be a DH, apparently, against the White Sox.
No, I mean, obviously the timing, they're in Chicago for two games, so there will be that DH opportunity. But no, this is an opportunity for the Cardinals to see what Stephen Piscotty can add to the offense. I mean, it's been no secret that through the first half of the season, this is a team that continues to look for a little more traction offensively. You look particularly at the lack of production they've had from first base this year. You know, they've shoveled through a lot of guys since Matt Adams went down in May. You know, Mark Reynolds has gotten a good amount of playing time, Xavier Scruggs, most recently Dan Johnson. Now it's going to be Stephen Piscotty. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, with Stephen, this is a guy who was drafted in 2012 as a third baseman, and in 2013 converted to the outfield, and earlier this month started playing first base in games for AAA Memphis. So, you know, we'll have to see how capable he is defensively there. Again, though, I don't think that's really the concern for the Cardinals. As long as he can hold his own at the position, you know, certainly if his bat can do anything to spark this lineup a little bit more, that's what they're looking for. So gives the Cardinals an option to fill in the outfield when needed, but I imagine that most of his opportunities, at least in the start, are going to come at first base.
Are you surprised at the move right now? Does the timing make sense to you? What did you make of it?
Yeah, no, it made sense. You know, the Cardinals are certainly looking for help at that position right now as the trade deadline nears, and I got the impression that they wanted to see if they could first address it internally, and if they're able to find an answer in Stephen Piscotty, then that sends, you know, it prevents them from having to go out and deal away players to try to find someone else externally. And there's not a ton of options out there right now in the trade market. With so many teams believing they're in contention for at least a wild card, it's tough to be a buyer in this market. So this gives the Cardinals a little bit of time again to see how capable he is at the position, to see what he can do offensively. You know, they've given Mark Reynolds almost 2 months now, and the production has been okay, but it just hasn't been up to where the Cardinals hoped it would be. So they're just shuffling through as many options as they can and hoping that at some point somebody's going to step up and run away with that job.
Okay, so, you know, and he may indeed do just that. They have certainly survived without a ton of production there just fine. What do you anticipate then would be the activities of the St. Louis Cardinals as we approach the trade deadline? Can you ballpark that, or can you get a sense for that, you know, without considering this Piscotty move, or does it all hinge on that?
You know, a lot of it does hinge on some things going on internally. I mean, it's very fluid. You look at kind of where this team was, I would say even a couple weeks ago, and I think you would have thought that probably starting pitching would have been a priority, not because their starting pitching has lacked. I mean, obviously this has been a team carried by its starting pitching, but, you know, with Jaime Garcia going down, with Marco Gonzalez having some injury issues, they were really one injury away from kind of having the lack of depth, you know, really magnified. Now, that being said, I think what we've seen from Tim Cooney this month has surprised a lot of people. Marco Gonzalez is getting healthy down in the minors, so he will be an option by the end of the month. And Jaime Garcia is also expected to be back on the mound before the end of the month. So, you know, all of a sudden starting pitching maybe doesn't look like such a deficiency as it did. But I think, you know, then in turn, you look at the offensive end, and really the easy place to add would be a first baseman, or if you wanted to look at third base market, you also have the opportunity to move Matt Carpenter across the diamond to play first base, which is a position he's very capable of handling. So I think they're going to kind of let this play out for the next 10 days or so and see how Stephen Piscotty does, and if he becomes a pretty attractive internal option, maybe they stand pat there. This is a team still looking for a left-handed bat off the bench, and I do think that they're also going to look for some bullpen help. I mean, again, the bullpen to this point has very much been a strength, but with Matt Belisle's kind of return you know, pretty uncertain at this point with some innings concerns, the workload concerns with Trevor Rosenthal, Seth Maness, Kevin Segrist, Mitch Harris also being on the DL. There is a little bit of a concern there that some of the relievers that have stayed healthy have been overworked and that some of the others are breaking down. So a left-handed bat off the bench, certainly a priority. I think a bullpen arm, wouldn't be surprised to see an add there. And then again, depending on how Steven kind of performs here in this next week or so, will probably dictate whether or not the Cardinals go hard after a first or third baseman.
Wow, I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of moving parts for a team that is, what, 58 and 34. What about the All-Star break? You know how the timing of that can be so interesting for different teams, but here's a team in the Cardinals that, you know, nothing could seemingly upset them in that first half. They ran into a little bit of an issue there with the Pirates right before the break. Seems like that break may have fallen at exactly the right time for this team. Not that you figured them to need any breaks, but that might have been a good little break for them.
I absolutely think so. You look at not just that they lost those couple games in Pittsburgh, but how they lost them. I mean, gut-wrenching, extra inning games, really wearing down, you know, a lot of facets of this team. You know, Matt Holliday was still out at that point. A lot of issues. Yeah, I don't think the break could have come at a better time. And really, you know, you also look at that break, it potentially stalled kind of the momentum that the Pirates built out of that series. And we see Pittsburgh comes back out of the All-Star break and gets swept by last-place Milwaukee. So, you know, it kind of stalled their momentum, and it gave the Cardinals a little bit of a chance to catch their breath. You know, I think the other thing for the Cardinals that was very important was just the opportunity to really build in a good amount of rest for both Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez. And we've talked about this on our podcast for months, but you know, those two guys, Cardinals are not ready for them to pitch 200 innings this year. Though if you look at what their workload has been thus far, that's the pace that they're on. So, you know, the fact that Michael Wacha will be pitching tonight basically on 2 weeks rest, you know, the Cardinals did have to use Carlos Martinez on Sunday with that 18-inning game, but he still was able to get 10-plus days of rest. You know, the rest that they were able to build in by using the All-Star break would really, you know, help those guys and help the Cardinals out down the road. I mean, the Cardinals certainly don't want a situation where they're having to shut down Wacha and or Martinez in September or October. So they're going to continue to manage that, but they were able to manage it really well with that break coming at a good time.
It's amazing. You know, again, some teams, you feel like they don't need any extra advantages or extra breaks. And this year, the Cardinals would be one of those handful of teams you'd say, you know, they got things under control. You give somebody else a break. But not only did the All-Star break come at that right time, give them some rest, enough rest that they were able to, you know, man up for that 18-inning game on Sunday. But then after an 18-inning game, they get the next day off. I mean, it's like, you know, those are gut punchers, those 18-inning games. And, you know, you tend to get one of those a year. And it's always really kind of a matter of, well, when does it fall, right? Does it completely annihilate you for a series? Do you get a day off the next day, as is the case here with the St. Louis Cardinals? They, you know, they caught a real break there. I mean, it's a tough loss, but they really caught a break with Monday being an off day, I think.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, because your bullpen, when it goes through a game like that, can really, you know, be put on life support for several days. And a lot of times there is kind of a many-day effect to that. But really, you look at the way they were able to navigate through that game. You know, Carlos Villanueva picked up a big load, and he might be a guy now, even 2 days removed from that, might be unavailable on the Tuesday opener against the White Sox. Other than that, though, the rest of their bullpen arm should be fine because really the other guy who was extended on Sunday was Carlos Martinez. Again, the Cardinals had hoped to give him a little bit more of a break, but he now won't be needed to pitch until the weekend, so he'll be able to get his normal rest as if he had kind of pitched Sunday as a start would have been for him. So, yeah, the Cardinals were certainly able to reset on the pitching end very, very well. So it was fortuitous timing on that part. And, you know, even offensively, there were some guys on Sunday that the Cardinals had hoped to give a break to. They weren't maybe able to get the break on Sunday, but they were able to get it on Monday. So you're right. Timing is everything. And for the Cardinals, it worked out very, very well that they had the day off immediately following.
Yeah, how about this, too? After these couple of games in Chicago, home for, is it 11 games? Am I reading that right? Is it an 11-game homestand?
Yep. Yeah, because they're making up the game against the Royals. Thursday was actually supposed to be an off day as well. That'll now be a makeup game against the Royals. And then you kind of look at that home schedule, and I believe it's the Reds, the Braves, and the Rockies. So, you know, when you look at the Cardinals looking for an opportunity to kind of take control of the Central again, those would seem to be some teams that they would look to beat up on. So certainly an opportunity there at Busch Stadium where they've played exceptionally well all year.
Yeah, it's been that kind of season. Finally, though, Jen, we were talking about this a lot a couple of months ago, how there was really nothing to watch. They were just kind of steamrolling everybody, and it just seemed like, ho-hum, another day. I do feel like, even though they're still in control, maybe it's just getting past the All-Star break. Now the games really start to matter a little bit more. It's starting to feel more like a pennant race. I still feel like they're very much in control, but it's starting to get interesting. And this trade deadline is going to be fascinating. We'll see what Stephen Piscotty does with his call-up. But I feel like, Jen, at long last, you've paid your dues, and now your season starts. You're getting the real good stuff starting now.
Well, I think so. And, you know, the Pirates are just close enough right now and kind of pulls close enough to the Cardinals that it is seemingly more of a race. You know, we talked a month ago, and the Cardinals are leading by 9 games. It felt like they were going to run away with this. But certainly Pittsburgh has other things in mind. You're right. I think the trade deadline is going to be fascinating to see what this team does. You know, you really don't necessarily want to shake up a lot on a team that has had the Major League, you know, Major's best record now for over 2 months. So what do they do to kind of address some little deficiencies? How do they do it to not kind of ruin the mojo that they have? It will be very interesting to see how these next 2 weeks go.
Well, enjoy it, and we'll look forward to getting together here again soon and getting your insights.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dave.
With our good friend Kerry Muscat. And Kerry, first of all, just, you know, how was the All-Star break?
It's pretty quiet. I did a lot. I know a lot of the players say that their wives give them a honey do list. I have my own do list for myself, so I was able to get most of the stuff done. Unfortunately, it rained on the day I wanted to play golf, but it was a nice break. It was fun. It was really fun to watch Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo in the Home Run Derby, and fun to watch the game and see Bryant in left field was pretty funny. But it was good to watch the Cubs and fun to see the whole event. So it's always a joy just to kind of sit back and watch it. So.
Yeah, right, as opposed to maybe covering it. You know, everybody can use a little break.
Well, I like the event. I mean, I like the event. It's just that it's a lot easier to sit back and watch it cover it than cover it.
There's no doubt. So. There's no doubt. And for those who, you know, are in that daily grind, it's a funny balance, right? Because everybody loves to go to the All-Star game, even the players, right? They love the honor. They love to be there. They have fun. And then if for whatever reason you didn't go, you didn't have to go, you know, those couple days off can be pretty sweet too, I know. I mean, like you say, try to get in there and play a little golf. Did you watch any of the U.S. Open, or rather the British Open?
The British Open, yes. I'm not going to comment because as we're taping this, it's not over yet. So we'll let that go. But no, Joe Madden talked about the break and how he enjoys doing nothing, and I can definitely relate to that. So.
Yeah. I've been going back and forth with your buddy Jim Deshays on this British Open thing here, and again, we'll hold off comment on this because man, pretty exciting stuff. So too, though, are the Chicago Cubs, and even coming out of the break, continuing to play good baseball. Nice to go into the break playing well, even better to come out of the break playing well. And I guess when the starting pitching is doing what it has done lately, it makes it a whole lot easier.
The starting pitching has really carried them, and it's a shame they're not getting a little more offense to go along with that, because you don't want the pitchers to feel like they have to throw shutouts every time, although it kind of seems like that's what they're almost doing. But you know, John Lester had a very interesting start in his first game after the break. You know, with he didn't know it was a no-hitter until the seventh inning when they made a switch in the scoring, and all of a sudden he's got a no-hitter, and then he didn't when Pierzynski singles. So little stuff like that. It's, you know, Jake Arrieta has already topped and set a career high in wins, and it's only early July, so he's got a chance to really have a special year. So it'd be nice to see the offense picking up a little bit, but we'll just give him a few days.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, sometimes a break can refresh things. Sometimes, though, you know, some guys don't always want a break either. But Addison Russell got the day off on Sunday, and it maybe one of those breaks that can help a guy. I know he's been in a a pretty nasty little scuffle lately. And, you know, sometimes maybe just getting one guy going can help pick up the rest of the guys. Or just giving some other guy a different look, putting somebody in there instead for Russell and then, and shaking things up a little bit. So who knows? But they've got to feel like they're still in pretty good shape. I know the division's a challenging one with what the Cardinals have done. But 8 games over .500, playing good baseball around the break. Any rumblings about what we might see happen toward the end of the month?
No, you mean by the trade deadline, I'm sure.
Right.
No, there's some interesting interior moves that they can do without having to go outside. For example, they've promoted Rafael Soriano, the veteran reliever, they called him up from AAA Iowa. Now, Soriano and Madden go way back. They were together in Tampa Bay when Soriano was a closer, saved 45 games. So right there, you're suddenly getting a veteran experienced player, and it started, when they signed him in June in the minor league deal. I don't think that Madden projects him as the closer. I think he wants him more as a just having an experienced arm in the pen. But right there, they hope that they've given their bullpen a plus there. They had to do so at the expense of losing Edwin Jackson. I know Cubs fans, there's a lot of Cubs fans that are happy that Edwin is gone. But on the other hand, I don't think Cubs fans know how much of an impact Edwin had in the clubhouse. He was really well-liked by his teammates, really a class act all the way. And every time anybody booed him, I wish they could have seen how he was just a stand-up guy with us, in the media, after a game, after a loss, after a tough day. He accepted his role this year in the bullpen without complaining, without pouting, without showing any signs of being upset about it. And to me, that's a true professional, and I applaud him for that. But as far as the rest of the, moves they might make, they've also got, some guys that are still kind of rehabbing. Zach Roscup is a left-handed pitcher that Madden likes a lot. They could get him back from an injury so he could help the pen. They've got Tommy La Stella, who's been rehabbing a strained oblique for, it seems like, forever. He might come up toward the end in the stretch, when they need another extra bat. There's some interior moves that they could do without having to go outside, and that might be kind of a big pickup for them.
Well, yeah, and then a guy like Kyle Schwarber, right? I mean, had a little. We were talking about offense earlier too. There's a guy who,
right.
I guess you could mix in at any moment and get a little lift that way.
Well, if he keeps hitting the way he's made this look so easy, that it's really really incredible. And Madden, the Cubs, as we're talking, they're starting a series in Cincinnati, and they've got 4 games in 3 days. And Madden plans on having Schwarber start behind the plate for 3 of those games. He wouldn't start the 4th one because it's a doubleheader, and you usually don't have the catcher do both games. But Madden really likes what he's seen from Schwarber. The Cubs all like what they've seen from Schwarber behind the plate. He's still got a lot to learn, but one of the most interesting things I saw when the team was in Atlanta was David Ross, the veteran at 38 years old, sitting there in a chair in front of his locker, and you've got Schwarber, the kid at 22, sitting there in a chair, almost nose to nose, talking about catching and talking about preparation and talking about the pitchers. And it was just, I give Ross a lot of credit because there are some veterans that maybe wouldn't be quite as helpful. And I give Schwarber credit for making the effort to really try and get as much info as he can. The kid is a sponge. I mean, he's one of the first ones at the park every day to go over video. He's working with Mike Borzello, their coach, who's also a catching instructor. I mean, he wants to make this work, and he wants to show everybody that it can work. Yeah, he can hit the crap out of the ball, but, let's see if he can handle the hard part, which is dealing with the pitchers. I thought he did really well with Kyle Hendricks in his first game on Friday, last Friday against the Braves, and Hendricks was really praising him and saying they were on the same page. And it'll be a little more of a test. They've been catching him and having him do catch the side sessions for the pitchers so he can get to know him a little better. And that's a plus. There's just so much stuff that's going on behind the scenes to get this guy ready. So I think his bat will really help.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting right now for the Cubs. Like you say, a lot of stuff we're not even witnessing, but there's definitely a transformation underway, and schedule's kind of, you know, appears to be kind to them coming out of the break here, at least for the first couple weeks too. So that may help as well. But all right, Kerry, we're running out of time, and I know you've got, you know, there's got to be some golf related something you could do, like maybe watch into the British Open.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll do it again next week. Thanks, Kerry.
All right. Thank you.
Tom, let's cut right to it. What the heck is going on? This team played so well into the break, and then they come out and get swept by the Brewers?
Well, you know what? The players themselves are obviously hurdled. This concept is a factor, but my thinking is it was so electric in PNC Park that last weekend before the break, before the Cardinals. And then you go on the road. You're playing a team that is an also-ran at the moment. You know, in Milwaukee, the Brewers, they had good crowds, but the crowd reflected the fact that their team isn't doing that well, and it was relatively sedate. And the change in the ambience had to have an awful lot to do with the fact that they played a flat series, you know, to use their own words, although they did not attribute it to the change in locale, but I just think that had a lot to do with it.
Well, I was wondering if you might go there because, boy, that those games going into the All-Star break, man, I mean, McCutchen with the game winner and just so many. I mean, not only were they big wins. We knew they were big wins, big crowds. Everybody understood the importance of those games. But, man, they were just brilliant games. They were just awesome games. And it is,
they were.
You know, to your point, it's a little tough to follow that act.
It's tough to follow, and there's a lot of, you know, truism to the fact that in a 162-game season, you do play up to or down to your competition. I mean, that's something that, you know, the guys in uniform will concede without being specific about, you know, this game compared to the last game. But they do play up to or down to the competition, and hopefully we just saw a temporary example of that. And the true test of that is the ensuing series in Kansas City against the Royals, who have the second best record in the majors next to the Cardinals. So we'll see if that formula holds true and the Pirates do indeed play with a little more vigor and more you know, efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, we are absolutely going to put it all to the test. You know, Monday night in Kansas City, American League's best record. Three games against a team that, in some ways, you know, you could draw some interesting parallels between the Royals and the Pirates. But yeah, that back end of the bullpen, man, it makes for short games when you're playing Kansas City. So, you know, the offense didn't exactly impress in Milwaukee. They're going to have to get something going early in these games, I would think.
And the teams are comparable except for the big element of speed. Obviously, that's a huge part of Kansas City's game. The Pirates use it to some extent, but certainly not doesn't have the relay track team that the Royals do. But as far as the team strength, you know, pitching absolutely is true for both teams. But, you know, how baseball goes, we'll probably have three 9-8 games. You can't predict the games.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. You know, we talked, a couple of weeks ago, prior to the All-Star break, about that series against St. Louis that would lead us all into the pause, the Midsummer Classic, and how important those games were going to be, and that they were going to have to sweep or take at minimum 3 out of 4 so that they were somewhere within shouting distance of the Cardinals going in. Well, sure enough, they take 3 out of 4. They end up going to the break 2.5 back. Now 4.5 out after this disappointing sweep in Milwaukee. But still certainly no, there can't be any panic, can there? I mean, there's still, what, roughly 70 games to go. And to be 4.5 back of the best record in baseball right now, I'm sensing that Pirates have to feel pretty good.
Oh, absolutely. When you look at the big picture, they were 9 games behind on June 28th. Even before taking advantage of playing the Cardinals head-to-head, they made up a lot of ground suddenly. So even though you're not 4.5 versus 2.5, but you're also 4.5 versus 9, 3 weeks ago, which is a huge jump right there. So, no, I mean, obviously panic is the furthest thing from anybody's mind. Although, you know, you're looking at some personnel difficulties now with a couple of key players, injured. They definitely withstood the loss of Josh Harrison to his torn thumb ligament. But now you kind of compound his absence with Jordan Mercer's, and we don't yet know as of this moment how long he'll be out. But, you know, if he's out for any length of time, you know, after your starting infield, your regular starting infield, obviously Jung Ho Kong has become a big piece in that infield. But half of your regular starting infield will be absent for who knows how long. And, you know, a team like the Pirates, you know, we hear it even when everybody is at full strength. The one thing they can't afford is critical injuries, because the depth isn't what it is in some of the big market teams who have, starting capable players on the bench just waiting for an opportunity. A little bit different with the Pirates. So their depth would be an issue, and also it affects the dynamic leading down to the trading deadline. I don't believe Neil Huntington was very keen. You know, you always look around, you explore, but I don't think he was very anxious to make any moves. But given these two injuries, I think he's definitely in a mood where an upgrade would be, practical, and he's actively shopping. Big difference from just a couple of weeks ago.
You know, even a couple of weeks ago, and I know he has maintained that they're pretty content with what they have. They've got to, don't they? Don't they just have to go be aggressive? I mean, you know, you've been right there the last couple of years, and it's just one and done with that wild card game. This window isn't going to stay open forever. And this team, as great as the last couple of years have been, this team is good. This team could really do something special. It kind of reminds me of when Atlanta came out of their long funk many, many years ago, and they got Fred McGriff at the deadline in July anyway. And McGriff really set fire to an Atlanta Braves team, and that launched him to 14 straight division titles. I feel like this is a team that is kind of balancing right in that similar area. You know, maybe there's an acquisition to be made here that launches the Pirates not just into a great finish this year and a postseason run, but maybe even more, right? Maybe even into an extended run of success there.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, we have to take it in consideration, what it would take to pick up somebody like that. You know, especially the trade deadline, all the emphasis, as usual, is on the frontline pitching that's available, and the Pirates definitely are not in the market for that, which might help them, because with everybody else focusing their chips on getting a pitching upgrade, maybe the competition for a really good available bat isn't as heated as it might otherwise be. So the price you have to pay is not as exorbitant as it might be with everybody competing for the same bat. Obviously, we've been looking at it's the same holes that traditionally they've had every season since Adam LaRoche. First base is a trouble spot. Right field, maybe not so much so, because Polanco really has picked it up the last 10, 12 games. But I think if they could pick up somebody that can play both positions, right-handed bat preferably, I think they would pay market price for somebody like that. And there are a lot of first basemen who are ostensibly on the market. Obviously, a lot of times teams make somebody available just to see what kind of price he can bring without actually intending to deal him right now. But I'm no question that Huntington is burning up the phone lines talking to every team that has a first baseman available, and especially one that can also double as an outfielder.
Yeah, I don't have any significant rooting interest in any one team per se, Tom, but I think I'm with a lot of other people who would say, you know what? Kind of as fun as it was to see the Royals make their run last year, I think there's a lot of us out there rooting for Huntington to make a move and do something exciting and see this team get back to its glory days. They're on the cusp, and I'm really looking forward to the series beginning Monday night in Kansas City. I hope you enjoy that one, and I'll be interested to talk to you again next week and get your thoughts as we get that much closer to the deadline.
It'll be great to get an update, Dave. I'll look forward to it.
I tell you what, Adam, we had a tough job for the first several months of the year trying to figure out why the Brewers weren't playing better. So now let's turn the tables a little bit. Help me understand what happened. You and I think I've missed you the last couple of weeks, and maybe that's it. Maybe it's just that you and I aren't talking each week, but all of a sudden this Brewers team might be one of the best in Major League Baseball.
Well, they're scoring runs at a rate higher than any other team, which is, on one hand, surprising where they came from. But, you know, partly I think what this is just getting, you know, things evening out a little bit, as they tend to do over 162 games. And we talked about this earlier, Dave. The Brewers were not as bad a team as the record reflected in April and May. They're not as good a team as the rate they're scoring runs reflects here in July. They're somewhere in the middle, and I think things are just evening out a little bit. The other thing that's happening, maybe a little more concrete, is that they're healthy again. And it happened very early in the season for this team that they got struck by injuries. They never really were able to put out their lineup as they were expected to field it coming into the year. And they're doing so right now. And Craig Counsell is able to put out a lineup with Jonathan Lucroy producing, with Scooter Gennett hitting 300 over a long stretch, with Gerardo Parra performing at a high level. All of these guys that were expected to be producers for them are now suddenly producing. And I think that's helping fuel what's happened lately.
Yeah, they definitely are scoring runs, and certainly a series against that Pirates pitching staff where you're scoring 6 and 8 runs a game speaks to that, because that has been unheard of this season. But what about, you mentioned, the change in management. You know, Ron Radke struggled. 7-18 was let go, and boy, at the time, to me, it felt like the season was halfway done, and it's almost laughable now when I look back on it. But Counsell, meanwhile, Craig Counsell, look, he's a 500 manager. He's 34-34 with this bunch. They're playing really well lately. How much credit should he get?
Well, I don't want to take away from what he's done, because he has, you know, he has gotten a lot out of these players, and he's managed well. There have been very few instances of second guessing. You know, that might be he's helped by having a really good bullpen. Ken Mock is the line that originally came from Whitey Herzog. In order to be a good major league manager, you need a sense of humor and a good bullpen. And Craig Counsell definitely has both, and that's aided him. The competition has helped too. Let's not pretend, because they got going here in the stretch where they really played well lately. It started against the Mets when they were really down and just could not score a run, against the Phillies, who have the worst record in the league and a poor pitching staff that got this Brewers offense going, really, and against a Reds team that was struggling in the pitching department at the time. So that helped get this Brewers team going. They built a little confidence, and now you do give Craig Counsell and the Brewers some credit, because they have played good series consecutively against really good teams now, the Dodgers and then, as you said, sweeping the Pirates at Miller Park. I think there's that good feeling, and to me, the best way to view this game is always a balance. The sabermetric stuff has revolutionized the way we look at baseball. It's really important, and it's really good in the big picture at predicting what's going to happen. But there still is something to this game beyond that, and there is this emotional aspect to the game. And I think what has happened for this Brewers team, and several individual players have referenced it, you get that good feeling coming to the ballpark every day when you're in a good stretch, and it feeds off itself. And I really believe that has played a role in what's happening. And I'll point to Scooter Gennett as an example. A guy, a second baseman, a good offensive player his whole baseball life. He comes into this year, and he really struggles amid team-wide. You know, he definitely was not the only one, but he struggles at the plate, batting 150. They sent him down to the minor leagues. He kind of just let things go from his mind a little bit and just went up there and hit. And he got a little confidence going. They bring him back to the big leagues, and it's continued. And he has said that, you know, there wasn't any big mechanical changes. It's not that he's swinging at different pitches. There wasn't anything physically to point to in how he's turned his season around. It's that he's got some confidence going. And I think that is partly what's happened with this team. Now, is that just on the players, or is this Craig Counsell some genius for getting this out of the players? Maybe somewhere in the middle. I'm not exactly sure, but there definitely is a different feeling around the team right now.
Yeah, I love the fact that you bring it up, because I do think that there is, you know, there's some unquantifiable quality. And, you know, during the All-Star break, I was there in Cincinnati and got to spend a little time with Jim Leland and Tony La Russa, and the two of them actually argued both sides of the chemistry element that we talk about so much in baseball. Does it take good chemistry to be a winner, or does good chemistry come from winning? And those two couldn't agree on it, which was interesting to me. And you're both successful managers, and I guess it just underscores that there's so many ways to go about it, but there is that unquantifiable yep. element to any team, and for that matter, any player, any moment, any game, that just you don't know where it comes from. Good leaders, I guess, you know, maybe have a history of being able to summon it, but it's still one of the great mysteries of the game. You know, another thing, though, that we should mention, Taylor Youngman, you know, we knew he was going to be pretty good coming out of college, the hard thrower with the Texas Longhorns and first-round pick and whatnot, but man alive, a 5-1 record, a 2.04 ERA. How good is this kid?
To find out, because he's starting to see teams for a second time. He reminds me a little bit, even though they're different pitchers, of Mike Fiers. Mike Fiers came up a couple of years ago, had a great run, really, you know, almost pitched himself into the Rookie of the Year debate. And he gets a lot of his outs with deception. The stuff's good, but on top of that, it's really hard for hitters to pick up. And Taylor Youngman is a similar type of guy. He has this crossbody delivery. And the catcher, Jonathan Lucroy, said, you know, Taylor Youngman is not some soft tosser. He's, you know, 92, 93. But Lucroy said it plays a lot higher than that because guys just can't see it. It comes at him from a real weird angle. So, you know, he's facing teams for the first time. They're not seeing him, and he's having a lot of success. I'm really curious to see what happens with Taylor Youngman as he faces teams multiple times. Now, the Pirates are the first team that he's seen again, and he pitched a gem against them to finish that sweep at Miller Park. So that was a really good sign for Taylor Youngman that this is not just smoke and mirrors, that this is true stuff that is getting through some really good lineups.
No, I guess that's the other side of it.
Again, Luke doesn't pump up guys unnecessarily, but he spoke really highly of Taylor Youngman. I mean, he used the word ace. Like, this guy could be a top-of-the-rotation type pitcher. That would be very good news for this Brewers team, because in his minor league career, he didn't necessarily pitch that way, so I don't know that that's been the expectation for this guy, but he's looked really good in the big leagues.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's certainly thrown like an ace, at least in these first couple weeks in the big leagues, but, you know, it is the other side of it, right, is that, yes, these teams are seeing him for a second time, but I guess at the same time, you know, he's seen some of these hitters for a second time and maybe learning a little bit as well, making some adjustments on them. So, you know, I do think that thing can cut both ways.
Yeah. You know, it's again, the Mike Fiers experience, I think, of. And to me, it's usually swings a little more toward the hitters the more a guy sees a team, especially if you see him within a season, within a short span. Jimmy Nelson comes to mind for me in April. He faced it was three teams back-to-back, right in a row. And it was a tough stretch for him because I think – especially that second time when the hitters had gotten a good look at him, it was more of a challenge. And, you know, hey, that's the big leagues. That's life. And especially if the Brewers get to where they want to get back to with some of these young pitchers, you're going to see, you know, you hope you get into a postseason series and you have to face a team twice in a week. So it's good experience for these young guys to do it.
Yeah, well, playing so much better lately. 16-6 over the last 22 games. Pretty good stuff. Well, Adam, as always, thanks for the time, man. You are right on target, as you are every week, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week.
All right. Talk to you then, Dave.
Well, here we are, Mark, a couple of days into the second half, as we like to call it, even though we're well past the midway point in the season. But, you know, the Midsummer Classic this year took place right there in Cincinnati. I know that made for a busy couple of extra days for you. Some folks get some time off in the season, but you're like the Iron Man of beat reporters out there on the streets working with the fans and everybody. And just what are your impressions after the week? I'd be interested to hear what you think about how Cincinnati did.
personally, I might be biased just because I've lived here for a long time, but I really did think Cincinnati did a great job with the whole week. I was really impressed with how the town kind of turned itself over to All-Star festivities. Everyone seemed to be having a good time. I felt like all the local establishments were ready for the amount of people that came through. And obviously the event benefited greatly from some luck. I mean, the weather held off. There was a lot of gloom and doom in the forecast, and every Jewel event, so to speak, went off without a hitch, without much weather interruption. So that was a big hit too. And overall, I really thought they nailed it.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I could agree any more. I was really tickled with the way Cincinnati showed up and represented itself, and I thought the ball club did well. I thought the city did well. And you bring up the point about the weather. I mean, one of the real highlights, I think, of the week had to be the Home Run Derby, the new format, the whole thing. And it looked for all the world like it was going to get not just washed out. I mean, like everybody was going to run for cover. There was some really wicked weather coming through. And the last time I think the Home Run Derby had been rained out was 1988 in Cincinnati. And so not only did fans get that treat, but what a show. I mean, that was – I've never been a big Derby guy, Mark, but that sold me. I mean, I love it. That was who could have ever conceived of a buzzer-beating home run? That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I knew even before Frazier and Prince Fielder faced off in the first round, you had the first bracket go, and you watch Anthony Rizzo – do it, and you kind of see him rushing a little bit, and you realize that there's a lot of time in those 4 minutes, but you knew this is different. This is a really interesting way to do it, and it's kind of ingenious in a way to take a sport that is generally timeless, like baseball, and then throw a clock on it and then watch how things work. And I thought it was a huge hit. I think if you lucked into something with the weather concerns, they shortened the minute. It was supposed to be a 5 minute round each, and they went to 4 minutes. And I think that was enough. I don't think those guys could have done that well with five. With the extra minute, it would have gassed them for sure. And then to have Todd Frazier, the hometown guy, go and basically take over the show and have dramatic endings in each of the rounds, especially to win it. Cincinnati could not have asked for a better outcome, but I also think Major League Baseball and ESPN could have asked for a better outcome, and that was just show-stopping stuff. It was dramatic. It was interesting. The clock added an extra element. Overall, it was a hit, and in some ways, it may have overshadowed the actual All-Star game, which is usually it doesn't happen in the Home Run Derby that way, because usually if you don't remember the Home Run Derby often, but I think this one's going to be remembered for a long time.
I don't doubt that for a minute. I mean, that was – you're right. It was an absolute spectacle. It was so fun to watch, and just, I guess, the energy, and I don't really even think it was that so much that Todd Frazier was the guy, but that did add a little bit with just the excitement in the crowd. I mean, it was bedlam there. You've no doubt seen some big games and some big moments there in Cincinnati, but I don't know, for me, for just straight visceral reaction from a crowd, not that I was stunned, but it was pretty daggum exciting. People were into it.
Yeah, I think when Jay Bruce hit the home run to clinch the division in 2010, that might have been a little bit more, even though they knew they were going to clinch. But that I could feel the press box shaking when that home run happened, and that was a pretty intense moment. That was 15 years of frustration kind of turning the other, turning the corner and going into the playoffs. I think that was a big moment. But I think this, as far as for Cincinnati and for baseball in recent history, especially at Great American Ballpark, where not a lot of history has been made, I thought the Frazier Derby experience is right up there with a lot of major moments that the park has experienced. Obviously, the Reds have had major moments in its history going way back, but I think in the recent history, this is right up there with anything else.
As long as we're talking about things overshadowing the actual All-Star game itself, in 1999, the Boston Red Sox did a phenomenal job with the pregame ceremonies. That was as show-stopping a presentation as we'll probably ever see. But I really, again, this is another area where I think you just kind of have to tip your cap. The pregame presentation, the franchise fours, all that in Cincinnati before the game, I thought that was done particularly well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Obviously, there was a lot of run-up about the whole Pete Rose situation. And when push came to shove, he had his moment on the field. He was acknowledged. Everyone seemed to be pleased with it. I didn't feel like it was too much. I thought it kind of hit the right note. But what I thought really made that whole pregame even more special was bringing out the greatest living four of Koufax, Mays, Aaron, and Bench. And then to have Koufax throw a ceremonial first pitch to Bench, I mean, that's what a battery that is. So I really thought they hit all the right notes in pregame too.
Yeah, the only thing that could have possibly made that better is if Aaron would have driven one deep to the wall and Mays could have gone up and robbed him. Then we would have really had something. You and I, you know, they didn't consult us beforehand. But so now we turn our attention to the Reds themselves as we begin playing the second half. And we all know there have been those moments of disappointment. And now we're entering that stage, you know, judgment day, I guess, if you will, for the franchise. So many real marketable pieces that could be moved at the deadline. You see what, you know, Aroldis Chapman has been able to do, you know, with his fastball, and he's so electrifying and exciting. What do you think? Are you ready to handicap what their plans may be and what we might see happen?
I'm pretty convinced that this is the beginning of the fire sale, that things are going to start happening. Hard to say exactly when. I think a lot of times with the deadline, you kind of know that you have that standing there, and you sort of wait for it, and then you start making your move. But I don't see any scenario where Johnny Cueto and Mike Leake are still with the team after July 31st. It's a little harder to tell with Chapman just because there's a lot of closers that are on the market. You have Papelbon, you have Kimbrel. You have K-Rod. There's a lot of closers on the market. Obviously, he's an exceptional one. But I also know that the Reds might be loath to part with him just because of the what he brings to the table in the ninth inning. Even though he's a pure luxury, if you're not competing, having a closer like that is a massive luxury, and you could save a lot of money by moving him, and I would move him if I was the Reds. But it's hard to handicap where Chapman goes. But you look at Jay Bruce, you look at Marlon Byrd, you look at Brian Peña, Manny Parra, et cetera. I could see a lot of guys changing teams between now and next week.
So if you were theoretically the man in charge, you would seriously consider moving Chapman too?
Yeah. I think he's got 2 years left in his contract. I think if you're on a rebuilding plan and you want to do the rebuild, you got to kind of commit to it. I just don't see a scenario. I mean, as great as his fastball is, and if he gets you 37 saves a year, that's great. But what are you holding? You can get other guys to close and probably get similar results. It won't be as exciting. It won't be 102 miles an hour. But I think if you have to at least look at it, and if you get a good offer, I wouldn't just dump him for nothing. But if you have a competitive offer, if you can package a blockbuster trade together, I would trade him, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that'd be a tough one. That would be a heartbreaker too. But they've got some very difficult decisions right on the immediate horizon, and you're going to be right there to keep us fully informed of what's happening with it, Mark. Well, you know, good luck with it. Enjoy a breather every now and then, because these next couple of weeks are going to be crazy, man.
Yeah. I was off this past weekend, so I got my post All-Star break, but I'm ready to go. Locked and loaded for now until the deadline.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, good luck with it. We'll catch up again, hopefully early next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
So there you have it. Another crazy week in the National League Central. Thanks so much for joining us. MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition.